Everyone, welcome back to Tudor Talk Time. We hope you've had a good couple of weeks. And yeah, we have a very exciting episode today, which is like something a bit new for us. So we're just going to be having a bit of discussion, looking at some of the debates around representation of people of colour in period dramas and period theatre. Okay, well, I'm just going to start with a little stat I found.
Oh,
so that between 2006 and 2016, 59% of UK films didn't feature a single black actor in a named character role, and 80% of historical or period dramas didn't feature a black actor in a named character role.
Wow.
So already we can see there's a huge disparity, especially from kind of comedy, romantic films, that genre, and period dramas. So obviously there's a huge argument as to why this is, but you can already see that there is a big difference, and that's something that we need to address, which is why we're having this discussion today.
And I think another, a real catalyst as well for us thinking about having this discussion was the new Anne Boleyn TV show on Channel 5. If you haven't seen it or you're not aware of it, basically it's just a show, mini-series I think it actually is, detailing the life of Anne Boleyn, and especially in court. But Anne Boleyn is played by Jodie Turner-Smith, who is a black woman, and obviously there was a little bit of controversy about whether this is sort of okay, but I mean, I think it's good because, I mean, Jodie said herself, as a black woman, I can understand being marginalised. I have a lived experience of what limitation and marginalisation feels like, and I thought it was interesting to bring the freshness of a black body telling that story. And I agree, because I think, well, she knows, like, she can fully understand. I mean, none of us can fully understand the feelings of Anne Boleyn, but she is a woman who's gone through intense marginalisation in her life, being judged for
people
the most menial
things about her.
And that is the essence of Anne Boleyn's story.
That's so true. That does give her, like, a really good outlook into Anne Boleyn. Like how Anne Boleyn probably would have felt. I think another thing is that this is a very blunt point, and I don't know if it's going to come out wrong, but like, people often criticize, they're like, oh, that person wouldn't have been that race. And it's like, yeah, but like, they also wouldn't have looked like whoever, like the white person who's cast. Do you know what I mean? It gets me. So, what is it? Didn't Helena Bonham Carter play Lady Jane Grey.
Yeah.
Lady Jane Grey wouldn't have looked like Helena Bonham Carter, but I just, for me, it's like, so it should be fine for, it shouldn't really matter, because they don't normally, sometimes they do try and get them to look similar.
Yeah.
Every now and then.
But
then,
also,
I admit that one's a bit tricky, but.
Yeah. But I also think it's sort of like the principle of it, that we have excluded people of colour from history just all throughout. And there's no reason to continue that. We've had like millions, well, not millions, that's a bit of an exaggeration, of reenactments of the Tudors, and there is no need to sort of have it keep going with the same white brunette actresses.
Yeah.
That, as you said, probably don't even like Anne Boleyn.
Well, I mean, sometimes they throw in a blondie face.
Sometimes they throw in a blonde Anne Boleyn, which I think is more offensive.
Yeah.
I've actually got another point about that, which I'm not saying I agree with, but it's just another argument. And it's kind of centered around Bridgerton. So Bridgerton was very heavily anticipated because you could see from all the promotional videos that it wasn't just a typical all-white cast. So people were really excited for it to come out. The promo photos, they showed black actors playing members of the English aristocracy. And they said they were using colorblind casting, which we'll talk about in a minute. But basically, there was then this frustration around Bridgerton that even though you were using people of colour, they were used as if they weren't people of colour. So at the time, people of colour wouldn't have been that accepted into society. And there is this idea that actually Bridgerton just ignored all the racism that would have been around at the time and almost just had people of colour for like a wokeness thing and didn't actually look at the context of the time, which it would have fit into.
Yeah.
I do somewhat agree, I really see that point, but I think they probably didn't maybe go into it as much as they could have, but they definitely, bring it up, because I remember the kind of point of having such a mixed cast, basically, and a mixed society that's accepted, is they do talk about it. Like, I don't really want to bore you guys with like the plot of it, but it's like Queen Charlotte obviously married George III for love. That's a kind of historical fact. But in Bridgerton, they made her a woman of colour, and so that then obviously they do definitely brush past. They're just like, and so then everyone of colour was accepted into society. But it's not quite, because there's one scene where Lady Danbury tells the Duke of Hastings, she's like, because of the colour of our skin, our place in society is very fragile and could change at any moment. And I think that's quite, I thought that for me when I was watching it, that was quite interesting and that was quite a prominent point.
But for a series that's two seasons long, a 10-second conversation doesn't really cut it.
But I also think it's like, the thing with Bridgerton is, they dress kind of like they're in romantic period Britain. They have Queen Charlotte and George, but that's pretty much where the resemblance to the true British society stops.
Yeah.
And I think there should be sort of, we shouldn't just let, like, force people of colour to play sad roles where they're getting marginalised and facing racism. We should allow, like, I think in a show with like Bridgerton, where it's already pretty unrealistic, everything that's going on, like, do we think that I feel like they should go either way. They need to pick a side, they need to choose what they're doing, but just sort of like, as you said, having one 10-second conversation feels performative. Like,
yeah, so either go all the way or don't
do anything.
Yeah, or make it just fictional.
Yeah. I definitely think it's a hard line to tread, because you don't want to, like you said, you don't want to make any time that people of colour are represented in period TV shows to be it. You don't want it to be all about, you know, like,
their hardships.
It's cool, yeah, but it's cool to just see people play historical characters of like any wealth, any status, no matter what they look like. But obviously, it is important to talk about it. I think it's a very difficult line to tread.
And then there were a lot of YouTubers afterwards who said that Bridgerton had only had such a diverse cast to kind of lure in audiences of colour, and to also make white audiences feel like woker, and to make them feel like they're doing something good almost by watching the series, and that it was just like showing the whole storyline is very naive. I don't think it attacked the storyline. I think it is like an unrealistic show, and I don't think it's meant to be realistic at all. But
yeah, I think there's many things
it's not a period piece. But I wanted to talk about the sort of argument of wokeness, because it's become quite a common thing that any time there's a person of colour in a historical drama, historical education piece, people like to say, oh, the only reason they're there is for wokeness. And an example of this was in 2017, the BBC released this BBC Teach video called Life in Roman Britain, and a brief summary is, well, it's an educational video, and it shows a black family as sort of wealthy Romans, and then there were white slaves, and some people were like, this is not okay. This is, I've got a tweet, because of course, naturally, the main discourse happens on Twitter.
I love your sources,
Phoebe. I know.
Quote the source.
Well, I've got, thank God the BBC is portraying Roman Britain as ethnically diverse. I mean, who cares about historical accuracy, right? So, not great.
Do we want to spend any time picking that apart and why that's
what I'm going to?
Oh, okay.
So
yes.
That's what my thing is. So, naturally, people obviously, and I want to just clarify that the person that said this tweet is not a historian. He's not a anyway historian or classicist. He was a man on Twitter. I think actually he was an editor for an economy magazine. So not exactly an expert on the subject, but you know who is? Mary Beard, a prime classicist at Cambridge University. And she replied, explaining how Roman Britain was actually diverse. And she says, one thing is for sure, the Roman Empire, Britain included, was culturally and ethnically diverse. From Syrians and Barth to Quintus Lollius Urbicus, the Ethiopian who met Septimus Severus on Hadrian's Wall, and the wonderful couple from South Shields, Barrett and Queenie. He from Palmyra, she an Essex girl. And also, I forgot to say that the man in this BBC Teach video was based off of a real character. Not a character, a real person in real life. A real man, a real black man.
A real man.
But he, so it's not like this was some sort of ploy to stick diversity in there. This was a true story. But we have genetic evidence of people of colour living in Roman Britain. We have from the skeletons. But I think it would be really interesting to talk about at some point in more detail about how we actually can't rely on one, either genetics or historians. You have to do a mix of both. And if you do a mix of both in this situation, you get a pretty clear...
A resounding yes
that Britain was extremely diverse.
I find it crazy you can tell from skeletons.
Yeah.
I think we can tell
where they're from primarily. Anyway, so... But the main argument that people had about this educational video was that it wasn't... It was just appealing to wokeness to try and shove diversity into a place where it wasn't necessary. And although this isn't true, that obviously Roman Britain is diverse and that's been debunked, although many Twitter people still like to send Mary Beard some little tweets saying that she's wrong, she is right, this is her life's work. I just find it really interesting that with Mary Beard, a lot of the time when people were attacking her and talking about how she's wrong, they do turn it into this extremely misogynistic thing, talking about how she's a woman and she doesn't know as well, and it was primarily men saying that she was wrong. Men that are not specialists in the field. One man said, and this is not a direct quote, so I'm sorry, but he said, "I've got more references under my belt in the last month than you have in your entire career." And again, I think he was a blogger, so let's let that sink in just a little bit.
Yeah. I think it's so, and I just think it's interesting because this is definitely off topic, so you can also cut this out. But I was on TikTok last night and I found this girl who basically she's a classicist, so similar thing but like slightly different, because she knows ancient Egypt and there's a whole thing about how they might have found Cleopatra's tomb, but I won't get into it. And the main researcher is a female historian who's dedicated her life to it, and I just think it's so interesting that it's always like, it's always women sticking up and making sure that these stories are rewritten. There's nothing against men, but that's why it's often...
Everything against men.
People often come for it because they're like, there's just internalised misogyny around it. Mm. But this isn't about that.
Sorry, just going back. I think the point with Bridgerton is that it wasn't meant to be historically accurate, but there are a lot of people who felt let down by the thing, and actually a lot of people using the word betrayal, which I think was quite a powerful word, because they'd hoped for kind of a more thoughtful portrayal of race. And I also think because we have lacked, you know, telling narratives from people of colour, I feel like the chance we get, maybe it should have been a bit more thoughtful, because we don't have that history for people of colour in the time that it's set. We have so little of that, and if they were going to do it, I think it would have been nice to have seen a bit of, you know, thought into that, because it is like the first time you're seeing people of colour in that era, and the first time most people are seeing that as well. I don't know, it depends, like that's just another argument about it. But I think we should go on to colourblind casting.
Yeah.
If you want to define that for us, Phoebe.
Well, the simple definition is basically casting characters regardless of their race or appearance, or skin colour.
Also known as race bending. So if you've ever heard or seen that term, they're basically the same thing, to be honest.
And Bridgerton was said to have used colourblind casting, but the showrunner Chris Van Dusen actually didn't like this term. He said that this would imply that colour and race were never considered when colour and race are a part of the show. So I think actually that quote is what made people feel a bit betrayed, because he'd made that statement saying colour and race are a part of the show when it isn't really.
Mm. Yeah.
Not as much as I think people would have hoped. Colourblind casting is becoming a lot more popular in the film industry lately, but we don't actually know the effect on people of colour. It's still quite unknown out there. It's very clear that there still is huge underrepresentation in the media, and all media for that fact, not just period dramas. And colourblind casting could be the way to change this, because it does create acting opportunities for actors actors of colour and also more role models for young people of colour, which is so important. But it does mean that the race and ethnic history of characters and actors is often unlooked, which is what we've already talked about. And this can result in the whitewashing of people of colour characters.
I do find it a bit weird that the way that we have to increase diversity is by becoming blind to people of colour, that the only way we can cast them is if we just don't know
them. Yeah, I guess it's kind of like telling popular mainstream stories. Do you know what I mean? It's like people want to hear certain stories, and so sometimes it's like with Anne Boleyn, for example, everybody always wants to hear about Anne Boleyn. I'm pretty sure Anne Boleyn's like our second most downloaded episode. But like, you can just tell by when you look at the number of downloads who people are interested in knowing more about. And so I guess I see it from that perspective. But then, I mean, there's also the other kind of diversity in period dramas known as own voices, which is where they particularly look, people find interesting stories about people of colour so that they can do that. But I just think it's a bit harder when we have such a whitewashed history. I think we first need to go back and unwhitewash the history in order to be able to get like really good diversity in period dramas. But that's just a kind of, obviously that's a personal view.
I read a couple of quotes from a man called Diep Tran, who's an arts journalist, and he specialises in diversity and ethics representation. And he basically says that anti-racists have to be very careful of the term colourblind. He said that colourblind casting is dangerous in the same way the phrase "I don't see race" is dangerous. It negates the very real structural hindrances that block actors of colour from the same opportunities as white actors, like low pay in the theatre industry, a lack of roles that are ethnically specific and actors of colour can play, and unconscious bias from casting directors. So that basically summarises all the arguments against it, that it ignores the actual narrative and it kind of ignores the actual structural things that need to be changed. Because I think it's also the same argument in women's football, when people go, why haven't the women's football team, why aren't they so diverse? And then some people go, oh, it's just a coincidence we pick based on merit, not on race. But actually the fact that it yeah. is lacking diversity is because at a lower level it is so hard for young black girls and young people of colour to get into women's football. Women's football grounds are always so far away, and it's about changing the structure at the beginning so that you can see diversity at the top of it.
And like in this case, I think it's like the reason we are having to cast people of colour into maybe white character roles is because there aren't roles for people of colour.
Yeah.
Because there aren't any characters.
We've looked over
yeah.
the importance of them in our history.
And it's also just about facilities in different neighbourhoods. So if there are better acting schools in white dominated neighbourhoods and richer neighbourhoods, then obviously you're going to get more white actors being able to break into the industry. Yeah. You need to have equality of, you know, facilities, attention, all that. So the other way of looking at it, colour consciousness. This allows directors, producers and casting directors to actually make diversity part of their consideration when casting. And it means they see a wide spectrum of people, not just the people who happen to actually make it into the room.
Yeah. I want to talk about own voices for a bit, the one white article listed that as one thing, which basically like it's about actual stories of people of colour. And I wanted to quickly just talk about Grantchester, which basically is a period drama, and then I just want to talk about one of the plot lines in it, which for me is a really cool representation of people of colour. Basically, just the context, the TV show is based on a series of books about solving crime in the 1950s by an Anglican vicar. But basically the specific plot I wanted to talk about was in season 4, a lot of it, well, I haven't watched it, but according to this, a lot of it followed a character called Violet, who was the daughter of a visiting African-American preacher, which is kind of how she comes into it, because obviously it's set in England, hence Anglican, shout out themes for forgetting that. And basically her character was used to kind of talk about, especially when you consider the setting of the time, 1950s, was to talk about US civil rights movement, and also to kind of like put it into the to the kind of, well, the quote is, treasured vision of the lily white British countryside. And so I just think that that's a really interesting thing, because what they've done with this is that they've kind of taken an issue that's maybe, I feel like it's very largely known that and regarded that the troubled history of Black people in America, right? And they put it into this kind of like picture perfect, like it's like British representation. Like, I think a lot of British people just think like, oh no, that didn't really happen. Like, we were kind of fine, like, because there weren't many people of colour, but it's like not really the truth. Anyways, sorry, I feel like I'm rambling. I feel really but yeah, I just think that that was a really, really cool way of doing it, because it's, first of all, it's, while it is historic, it is also a piece of historical fiction. So I think that it was, so you can easily add in characters like that, and I think that's a really, I think it was a very cool way to have the representation and then also force the audience to consider the kind of struggles around, or in this particular case, the civil rights, US civil rights movement and things like that. But yeah, I don't know, I thought that was cool.
I think the big one that a lot of articles were talking about, and I'm just going to say what the article was called, Why Dev Patel and Dickens Could Change Film Forever by The Guardian. So that was, obviously it's a big thing because we're thinking it might change film forever. So Dev Patel, if you don't know, is a Londoner of Indian heritage, and he played David Copperfield in an adaptation of the 1850s Dickens novel. It's actually called The Personal History of David Copperfield. But the whole point of this whole movie, or series, I don't actually know what it is, this show, it wanted to cast people who were capable of embodying the characters as well as possible, regardless of their ethnicity. And actually, one of the people said, it says, I suddenly realised I was watching three young Black British actors in a Dickens adaptation, none of which were written as Black characters, and it didn't seem odd, it's just another scene in a film. It's not a book about racial politics, and we're not trying to make a version of it that comments on racial politics, which is trying to make a version that comments on the diversity of humanity, I suppose. So none of these characters were meant to be people of colour, but actually most of the cast are people of colour because they did it completely on merit, not on what it was meant to look like. And people have loved seeing that because the book itself doesn't focus on race, and I think that's the difference. The book doesn't mention race, so it's completely okay to have people of colour playing normal roles and not addressing the racial differences. But then if you compare it to Othello, a lot of the critics of Shakespeare have actually said, a lot of critics have said that most Othello adaptations have ignored or downplayed the issue of race, which Shakespeare did actually talk about. A lot of the Othello adaptations, a white man plays Othello, and sometimes even when a Black man does play it, they're really whitewashed, and the issue of race isn't even brought up, when actually in the play it is an actual issue. So I think that's like the difference. If it is intended to be an issue to be discussed, it's important to discuss it. There was a lot of criticism around the 1981 BBC adaptation, where a white man plays Othello, so a lot of the actual racial language used towards him is just completely left out, and it actually means they're deviating from the actual play that they've taken it from, which is just a bit weird because they've intentionally left it out. And even in the 1995 version by Oliver Park, people have said that it's still not realistic as it should be. Othello has come off too confident and kind of almost arrogant in a society that would have completely repressed him. And this lacks the balance that Shakespeare actually wanted, because it doesn't focus on his race in the way that they intended.
I think that's so interesting. Yeah. I think that kind of shows that, well, it's kind of useful for what I was wanted to talk about, my final thing, but I think it kind of shows the importance, like, I feel like if it's talked about in a piece of literature, which obviously like is a good, really good thing to talk about, then you do need to stick within those kind of racial lines to an extent, especially with what you said about Othello. It doesn't really make sense to cast a white person.
Yeah.
But I think about David Copperfield, I think when we take fictional pieces that don't talk about race, that were written a while ago and therefore are period dramas such as Pride and Prejudice, for example. That's just a very basic example that everybody knows. That's obviously not based off a real story as far as I'm aware. it's based off a novel. And I think that's why it's been a lot easier to see more integration in casting on stage, potentially. For me personally, I'm thinking mainly about musicals because I do really love a good musical. But in lots of musicals retelling history, they have, colorblind casting, but it's just more that it's more in the sense that a lot of West End productions have got very much like all characters, no matter kind of who they were, who they're traditionally written for. So, for example, in Les Mis, we've had in the West End and UK tour, we've had people of many different like backgrounds playing characters that in the first version were white. But because race isn't really the main problem that's talked about, because there are quite a lot of problems going on in Les Mis, I feel like it's kind of fine. And then obviously Hamilton is a whole other thing in and of itself. I mean, Hamilton's definitely faced a bit of backlash, but I think it's a very interesting debate. Obviously, we don't have much time. But it's a very interesting debate of like, because it was very important to Lin-Manuel Miranda in the original casting to pick actors descended from slavery and colonialism to play the founding fathers, which is definitely a very, for him it was rewriting the existing like narrative of early American history, which I definitely think is an interesting thing. To talk about. I think it's very cool, and I like the way that from a kind of like visual perspective how people's different races and stuff were really they were really important kind of things. So when you look at like the different like hairstyles and stuff, I also think that that's another really cool thing in Six the musical. I mean, obviously that one's taken a lot of creative liberty with everything, quite frankly, with the stories, with the costumes. And so I think that that's another really cool representation, because I think they're still telling the stories of these women, but they've just taken it on their own twist. And I think that's fine, because honestly, there's been like castings of like loads of people of colour for the different six queens, and I think that that's really cool. And I think the way that they're allowed to, obviously Six is kind of hard to talk about because the costumes are not historically accurate, but I think the way that they've encouraged people to use when it comes to hair and makeup things from their own culture, I think is so cool. So that's just a kind of personal thing. I think that's a really cool way to increase diversity in theatre, but obviously I understand the troubles with it as well. But I think because Six is so creative, that it took a lot of creative liberty, I think it works quite well personally. But yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to say about theatre in a nutshell.
Okay, well, cool. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. And as ever, if you've got any thoughts about this, please do send them in. We'd love to hear what you've got to say. And we'll see you next week on
Tudor Talk Time.